Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
If you're a parent like me and you're worried about the coronavirus and everything you're hearing in the media, are you as worried about the flu and RSV as you should be? Because they're far more prevalent, but we're going to learn all about them today with one of our favorite guests, Dr. Wendy Sue Swanson. She's board-certified pediatrician, spokesman for the American Academy of Pediatrics, mother of two boys, and a blogger for WendySueSwanson.com. Dr. Swanson, I'm so glad to have you with us today. It's a huge topic, but let's start for the listeners by telling them the difference between RSV, influenza, and these novel coronaviruses, because people don't realize there's a lot of coronaviruses we know about. We just didn't know they were coronaviruses.
RSV and influenza, most parents have heard of at some point. They're very common viruses, and they have a big burden when it comes to American families, meaning that so many of us have RSV in our home or influenza in our home. So for example, RSV is a really common cold. In fact, by the time most kids are one or two, almost every single child will have had the virus, and you and I have had it too. It's just that it causes more significant or severe illness in young babies or even children under the age of two, something called bronchiolitis, where RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, a certain kind of virus, comes into the body, causes fever, but causes a ton of mucus and snot production. And when you're a little baby and your airways are really small, it's harder for you to clear that infection and just clear the mucus out of the way. So babies will get rapid breathing or what we call respiratory distress and sometimes even have to be hospitalized. But I mean, it's common in that all the kids kind of pass it around daycares, it's in the grocery stores, it lives on, you know, door handles and everything else, and then we can get it. We hospitalize somewhere between 50 or 60,000 babies and toddlers every single year with RSV. It's that common. So it's just around. Same thing with flu. So, I mean, as most families know, we are having a severe flu season this year again, unfortunately. Estimates as of this week, so, you know, we're right in the parts of February here, early February, we've already seen 19 million cases of flu is what's believed to have been gone on in the United States. 10,000 Americans have died from flu. That includes 68 children. So it's a real burden of disease. It's just a part of our lives. That's why it's so amazing that we have the flu vaccine, right? That we can decrease the likelihood of getting the flu in the first place. Works about 60%, 50, 60% of the time, which people don't like that number, but it's still so much better than nothing. And we can avoid young children who are at some of the highest risk, or kids with underlying conditions like asthma or diabetes who are at high risk for side effects. We can avoid it with the flu vaccine. But it's here, right? It's in our U.S. households. If you look at the maps of flu activity right now, the whole United States is almost all red because the activity of influenza is so high. So think about it, 19 million Americans, 10,000 deaths, and even 68 children who have already passed away. So if families are driving around listening to this radio show, or you're listening to this in your home and you haven't yet had flu vaccine, I cannot encourage you enough to get it. You know, typical side effects of the flu vaccine are sometimes in older children, even a mild fever, but in young kids, that's even the most common. But most of us will just feel sore at the site of the injection, or sometimes you'll feel the effects of your immune system revving up and responding to it in the day or two after the flu vaccine. But the good news is it decreases the likelihood of ever dying from influenza, ever getting the infection in the first place. And if you do get the infection, you tend to have a much less severe infection. So that's flu and that's RSV. Totally prevalent here in the United States, a big part of U.S. American households, and unfortunately a big burden of disease, missing work, missing school, and feeling like absolute crumb. Now, then there's the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus that we're hearing about. Now, I have to tell you, I just was out of the country and came through O'Hare. And as many Americans have heard, there was a case of coronavirus that came and stemmed. All of the cases that we know about so far around the world have stemmed originally from a region in China called Wuhan, the region of where they believe that this virus, which is just a coronavirus, it's just one kind of coronavirus. Now, the world has had experience with those kind of viruses in the past with infections that you probably remember called SARS or MERS. Those are different kinds of coronavirus that have caused these kind of unusual and somewhat severe respiratory infections. What's different about coronavirus for American families and parents driving around is that the threat or the risk of it ever coming into your home is extremely low. Thank goodness. Now, the world is working hard to make sure that that stays that way, right? They've quarantined people in Wuhan, China. We currently have a travel ban in the United States, which is actually saying people coming from that area can't come, let alone if you do come, you have to be in quarantine for 14 days if you've been in that region, because they're just trying to get to the stem of the center of these infections around the world and make sure that they don't spread. But in total, around the world, even from some of the cases that have come here to the United States, right, we haven't even seen any kind of numbers like we've seen when it comes to flu, right? They've had, of course, certain number of infections around the world in the 20,000 range. And of course, there have been deaths from the coronavirus, but the numbers really aren't that high. They're like 500 deaths, right? 20,000 cases, not 10,000 deaths from flu, for example, or 19 million cases of flu. So, you know, number one, if you're not traveling to China, the likelihood of you ever coming in contact or your child ever coming in contact with coronavirus is exceedingly low. Our country and the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, and authorities from around the world are working really hard to make sure that they're quarantining and tracking where the infections have come from and where they've stemmed from, of course, in that area of China. If you come in contact with folks who have traveled to China, at this point, people are being, I think, much more cautious when they've had travel from China, if they're doing it at all. I mean, many of us, you know, we even, in some of the work that I've been doing consulting on food allergy prevention around the world, for example, we had meetings planned in China that are just canceled at this point. People aren't traveling there if they don't have to, because we want to ensure that we're not bringing any of it back. But we're learning a lot about the novel coronavirus right now. We're learning about the what's called the incubation period, the timing of if you get exposed to it, how long from the time that you get exposed, for example, would you even have reported, you know, have symptoms from it? And then when you have symptoms, how do we make sure that you don't spread it? And of anything, what we're learning is just like other infections like RSV or like influenza or any of the other common cold viruses, the number one way you protect your family from any infection is washing your hands. And however stupid and boring that sounds, it's true, because these kinds of viruses can sit from mucus or phlegm or droplets in the air. So if you're sitting across from someone with influenza on the bus and they cough, they spread, right, respiratory droplets into the air. And if you inhale those respiratory droplets, sometimes you'll also get then exposure to the infection, and you can get the infection, particularly if you haven't had the vaccine and don't have levels of immunity to protect you. The same is true with the coronavirus. We think that it's spread through respiratory droplets, and that if you can keep a distance from someone who's ill, for example, for about 3 feet or three, even ideally 3 meters, the likelihood of you ever coming in contact with a respiratory droplet is pretty low. But the reason we always want you to wash your hands is that some of these viruses will just stay on surfaces. So for example, if you have RSV, or your child has RSV and they cough and they get mucus or spit on, and it gets on your hand, and then you touch a doorknob, that RSV virus is actually on that doorknob now for a while. And then if you touch the doorknob and then you touch your face, you can kind of spread that virus in that way. And so in some ways, RSV and influenza, and actually another, you know, infection that many people have heard so much about, the measles virus, those are even far more infective, meaning that, you know, measles, for example, which, you know, as we all know, in the last year, we've had outbreaks in the United States. We are not having a ton of active measles cases right now, thank goodness. But that stays in the air much longer, like 2 hours after someone's been in a room where it's even more infective. Coronavirus is not thought to even be as infective as measles is, for example. But we know that it is likely to be more dangerous in some ways than even influenza in the number of deaths that you have versus the number of people who've had the infection. But as we are learning about the novel coronavirus, I can't stress enough, it is not something that most American families are going to come in contact with. It's not something that most American families need to worry about. And as we learn more and more about it, we'll learn how to contain it, hopefully, so that it doesn't become a big threat. And that's what the work is going on now. But it's just a reminder for us as pediatricians, and for me as a parent myself, it's like, if your child has an illness like a fever, runny nose, and cough, keep them home from school. Wash your hands. Keep your distance from others. Don't send your kids back to school until they've been fever-free for at least a day. And also when they're really able to cover their cough and not, we think, spread respiratory droplets. Make sure if you haven't had flu shots, right, that you're getting those flu shots now. It's not too late to do that. You will increase your family's protection, and it will allow for your family to be less likely to get the infection, but also, of course, spread the infection to even people who may be of higher risk. If you're a pregnant mom,
no question you need a flu shot. If you've got young kids, so infants and babies under the age of 2 and toddlers under the age of 2, you know, your kids are at much higher risk of having a side effect or respiratory distress from something like RSV, like we talked about, or from influenza than ever from the coronavirus. So the good news about living here in the United States is we've had only isolated cases. The government and the public health system is totally in place, making sure that we're really tracking the infections. We're tracking the place where they've stemmed from. We're taking great precaution when people come into the United States that we're doing good surveillance and making sure if people have been traveling in areas where there's lots of active coronavirus, they're being quarantined even at this point. So our threats for typical American families, like I'm wandering around in the middle of Madison, Wisconsin right now with my family, and I know that the biggest threat for our family is exposure to influenza, and of course, always exposure to even things like RSV. And it typically is those younger kids that we worry about the most.
Wow. You know, that was such a great explanation. As a parent, you gave me a sense of relief about that. But of course, we still do need to be worried about flu and RSV, as you say. So besides hand hygiene, obviously, and keeping our kids home from school, you see the people, you know, over in China with the masks on. Should we be wearing our masks? Should we use at the grocery store the antiseptic, you know, the sanitizer they give you, the cleansers for the cart before we use it? What are some other things we can do? And besides staying home from school, what can we, as a pediatrician, what can we do over the counter? What do we do for our kids when they're, or ourselves, when they're that sick?
Yeah, you ask a great question. So first and foremost, I'm so glad you feel a sense of relief, because all families should, listening to this. I mean, coronavirus is just not a typical American household problem right now. So I want people to feel that this is under control and that their risks are very low. They're not zero. It's never zero. I mean, for example, when I came into the United States, I went through O'Hare and we landed at the same time a flight from Beijing did, and everybody around me was surrounded in masks, which actually is a really visually intimidating thing, right? It kind of makes us feel really scared. First and foremost, you don't need to go get a bunch of masks. I mean, what's interesting about that is that although a person who's sick with a cold, if they're wearing a mask, it's a really nice thing to do for others, because when they're breathing out or coughing, right, all that droplet that comes out when you sneeze or you cough isn't really going into the air. That's what a mask does a really good job containing. But it doesn't create a seal, meaning that if you're not sick, you wearing a mask is probably not going to do a big ton of good. It might do a little bit of filtering, but if you're still breathing in droplets, or remember, if you're touching the handles on things or counters or surfaces that have some of these viruses like flu or RSV on them, you could still get them that way. So I do not think that families need to rush out and buy a bunch of masks, right? Again, masks do the most good in protecting those who are ill from spreading it, not from protecting those who have not been ill yet, okay? So that's one thing about a mask. And then your question, just like practical stuff. Well, yeah, when you go to the grocery, if there are those wipes for a grocery cart, absolutely. Do I use them? Yeah, I really do. Why would I not? You know, they do a good job killing infections like flu, and they do a good job killing infections like RSV. So those are the viruses that are most common this time of year. So if you're going to go to the grocery and those little wipies, use them and wipe down the grocery cart, because who knows who is just walking around with a cart and when they sneezed and rubbed their nose and touched the handle. So no question that makes a ton of sense. You know, using hand sanitizers before you eat, after you've been in public places, you know, before a meal and things is always smart. You're always going to decrease the likelihood of infection at that time. And then hand washing is just great. Hand sanitizers do a good job with these viruses, though. I can't stress that enough. So there isn't necessarily a superiority. But the wonderful thing about when you do real hand washing before a meal or after your kids have been playing with other kids and you're coming in or after you've even been at the grocery or something, and of course after you've used the bathroom, right, you're actually kicking any substance or mucus or snot or saliva or anything that's been picked up in your hands, and you're taking it off. You're not just kind of deadening it or neutralizing it. You're really kind of starting fresh that way. But it is a real 20 seconds that's good hand washing. When you look at the data on hand washing that's really protective, it's a real deal hand wash. So it's not like put your hands under the water real quick. It is really like putting your hands under the water, putting, you know, soap back and forth between your hands, doing their singing the ABCs as with young kids, they'll sometimes do that. Older kids will just roll their eyes. So, you know, do your best to keep it on as long as you can. And then the staying out, you know, and I can't stress enough this kind of presenteeism problem. You know, I think we live in a culture of American society where we work hard, we expect our kids to be in school all the time, and we don't have a ton of compassion for illness. I just don't think we do. And I think, you know, it's a good and nurturing and loving thing to work with the teacher on what homework you can do at home and to keep your kids home when they don't feel well, to make sure that when their fevers are bumping up, that you're caring for them and you're also keeping them home, and then letting them really recover to a time when they really can make sure they know if they are going to keep coughing, that they're coughing into their elbow, right? That they're not, that they really have kind of control of that respiratory system in that way before they go back to school. And the same is true for all of us with work. I mean, it is hard to call in sick. It's hard to let people down, but it earnestly is really the best way to not just take care of yourself, but take care of your own family and take care of all of those around you too.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent information. Dr. Swanson, really, do you have any final thoughts, something you'd like to leave parents with about the flu, RSV, whether it's too late to get the vaccine, and then of course the coronavirus, what we're hearing about?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, calm down about coronavirus. It might be kind of a fascinoma for you right now, like watching the news, and it might be interesting to learn about because it is. But we're learning a lot. We're also continuing to know that here in the United States, the likelihood of us running into an infection, an active infection from someone with corona, you know, this new coronavirus is extremely rare. So calm down, keep your eyes and ears open, but it is not the biggest threat. Flu is raging right now in the United States. It is active in all of the United States. It is in high red alert in most of the United States, with 19 million Americans already estimated to have the infection. Get your flu vaccine today or tomorrow or the next day without question for any baby over the age of 6 months or any child as well, and especially those with underlying health conditions, and especially pregnant moms who are at high risk for severe flu. And, you know, wash your hands and stay home. And then when it comes to RSV, the one thing for families to remember is if you've got a little baby or you've got a toddler who's got a cold and maybe not even a big fever, but you find that they're just breathing super fast, that's the time to go in and see your pediatrician. If you look at your baby from across the room and they're huffing and puffing and huffing and puffing and they've got a terrible runny nose, it's a time to just go check it out with your pediatrician. RSV does tend to hit these babies and toddlers much harder, and we're certainly seeing it this time of year. So hand washing, stay home, take care of yourselves, and remind yourself that it is okay to take a sick day. It is okay to call in sick. It is okay to take your kids home. And in fact, it is the right thing to do to stop the spread of infection and to fully recover yourselves when you're home and not feeling well.
It's such great information, and I'm so glad you came on, Dr. Swanson, and cleared this up for all of us and really gave some relief to parents like me. You know, I've got a son in college, and it makes me feel better to know that this is not something that we need to be so afraid of, but that we really do need to take precautions for flu and RSV and these things that we are seeing and that you pediatricians are seeing every single day. And parents listening, please share this show with other families. Share this with parents that you know. Put it on your social media, because this is how we're going to all learn together from the experts at the American Academy of Pediatrics. You can listen on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, everywhere podcasts are played. We want you to listen at RadioMD.com, of course, and this show in conjunction with HealthyChildren.org, the consumer website of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which we are so proud to do this show. And this was an important one. So please share it. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melanie Cole. Stay well.